The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Yeah, the political mudslinging is far from done, even though there's been a lot of it over the last couple of months. The debates are completed for the 2024 US presidential race, and it is now a straight run in to November 5th, just under a month, where Americans will decide who will be the so-called leader of the free world. And joining me now to reflect on what's been a dramatic few months is Paul Brandis, Westring Reports founder and White House Bureau Chief. Thanks a million for joining us, Paul. I suppose we might start, where are we on the polls and on the national polls? Who's the favorite, I suppose, going into this last month?
Well, it depends on the poll, depends on who you talk to, but it's really just too close to call, I think. If you look overall on a national basis, it looks like Harris has a narrow lead, about a point and a half, 2 points if you average all the polls together. But that is not how elections are won in this country. Of course, we have this electoral college, meaning that the election is going to be decided on a state by state basis. And the picture there is muddied, too, frankly. There are about seven states with their electoral votes that are really up for grabs. And it is those that will decide the fate of the election. Of those seven states, I would say that, again, the numbers kind of are very static. They inch up and down very, very little. I would say that Harris probably leads in about four of those swing states, Trump in two of them, and one is just a flat out tie. So it's really just close to call. That being said, if I had to pick one or the other, I would probably rather be in Harris's shoes now, for a variety of reasons, but it's just too close to call. And as you say, with a month to go, just going to go down to the wire. All kinds of things can happen between now and then.
And so what are those reasons that you think Harris has the nose in front?
Well, I think that overall, I think the main deciding factor is probably going to be women. There are more women in this country, first of all. More of them turn out to vote. Second, so in both absolute and proportional terms, there are more women in this country. They're more important in terms of the electorate, and they go for Harris in a fairly clear way. The question is, what will the turnout be? Will they actually go to the polls in all these swing states? It depends on the weather. For example, if it rains, some people actually stay home and don't go out to vote, if you can believe it. So, but I think women will be the deciding factor. And there, Trump is clearly behind just because of the women's issues and his attacks on abortion, the overturning of Roe v. Wade, the constitutional right to an abortion, that kind of thing. But that being said, that's going to be outweighed by Trump's attraction towards the male vote. But again, that's the lesser part of the electorate.
Mm. How many of those swing states does Harris need to win in order to keep Trump out?
Well, it depends on the numbers that each one has in the Electoral College. And there are all kinds of models that each side is using to get to 270. You need 270 electoral votes. So, you know, there are all kinds of models, and it depends on, you know, adding up the numbers and everything. But generally speaking, the Harris model reflects the Biden model when he beat Trump 4 years ago. And that depends in no small part on what's called the blue wall. These states of the upper Midwest, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. Those are the three, particularly Pennsylvania, which is just a flat out tie. And both sides are going all out. I mean, Trump was there last night speaking at the place where he was nearly killed a couple of months ago, that kind of thing. All the candidates are in and out of Pennsylvania on a pretty regular basis. But I would say for Harris, it comes down to, can she win Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania? And then there are others that are just crucial. There's Georgia, the state of North Carolina, Nevada, Arizona, on and on and on. So those are the ones that Harris needs. But I think Pennsylvania, both sides seem to think that that will be the decisive state in both camps.
Yeah, he was back on that stage, as you mentioned, that he was shot on. I thought he had quite a good line as he started his speech and said, well, as I was saying, as picking up where he left the speech off, which was quite clever. Elon Musk also appearing beside him. He seems to be taking a much bigger influence in the campaign than maybe you'd like to see from someone who controls one of the biggest social media platforms in the world.
Well, Twitter, well, I guess they call it X now, has really been discredited, just in my personal view, in the sense that when he bought it, 2 years ago, I guess, one of the first things he did was to fire all of the content moderation people who would make sure that nothing incendiary, inflammatory, or disinformation and so forth got on there. He got rid of a bunch of those people and now uses the platform himself for a lot of those very reasons. I mean, he posts things that clearly are not true. He's also, just by virtue of his enormous wealth, has been pumping a lot of money into Republican causes. Trump, obviously showed up last night, as you mentioned, big Trump guy. The question is, what impact will this have on the broader electorate? My own sense is that Musk is doing, and what J.D. Vance, the Republican vice presidential nominee, what they're doing is they're energizing the Trump base. But are they expanding the base into non-Trump supporters, getting some of these independents who are maybe wavering a little bit? I'm not quite sure that they're doing that. But in terms of energizing folks who are already inclined to vote for Trump, I think they are doing that. But that might not be enough to get to, again, those 270 electoral votes, but we'll see.
Yeah, there's nearly a shadow election here of, do you support Elon Musk or Taylor Swift? Who's your corner? One of the big questions, Paul, has been, will there be a peaceful transition of power if Trump loses? And there's a lot of variables in that, but one that occurred to me this morning, I haven't really heard talked about. So the way that the Electoral College works, that you mentioned in the past, that the public vote and then the Electoral College have to vote on January 6th. We know what happened the last January 6th that happened. But that occasion is overseen by the vice president, which in this case is the candidate. So it struck me that if you are buying into the Trump, MAGA, the election is rigged, all that sort of stuff that he's getting there, and then they see Kamala Harris overseeing the process that would win her the election, were she to get the votes, that fits very dangerously into a Trump narrative that could perhaps oversee it. So is she allowed to oversee that, the counting of her own electoral votes, should she win?
Well, there are models for this. I mean, in 1960, when Richard Nixon barely lost to John F. Kennedy, he was the sitting vice president. And when they counted the electoral votes, he was in the chamber. The vice president is the president of the Senate. And he announced the results, but the procedure followed what the Constitution allows for. We saw it again in the year 2000 when Al Gore lost an even closer race to George W. Bush. So there are precedents here. And if it were to happen again, I think it would. Well, it's such an unusual year, it's hard to make predictions. But I think that Harris would not so much be involved as to announce the results based on what these electors do on the next January the 6th. There are a couple of things that are different, though, between now and 4 years ago that I think are notable. One, Trump is not in power. He doesn't control the army or anything like that. He can't order anybody around. He can maybe tell his supporters, as he did 4 years ago, to go out and protest, and there might be some of that. But from a security standpoint, just physical security around the Capitol is going to be far different than it was 4 years ago. They've been talking about this for months. They're going to have a lot more folks out just protecting the perimeter of the Capitol, drones flying overhead and just keeping an eye on things, that sort of thing. So from a physical security standpoint, it's hard to see anything happening like 4 years ago. That being said, the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI are quite worried, and in fact, seeing some chatter on the internet about groups around the country, the pro-Trump groups stirring things up and causing trouble. But we'll see. The other thing, in addition to all of that, is that Trump himself is already kind of laying the groundwork for possible trouble if he loses, as he did in 2020 and 4 years ago. He's talking about how, you know, it might be rigged and the Democrats are going to try and cheat and blah, blah, blah. Of course, if he were to win, then it's a free and fair election. But if he loses, well, of course, it was rigged. That's just the way he goes. So that's sort of where things stand.
Yeah, I think even with a sitting president saying that it will be free and fair, but might not necessarily be a peaceful vote, it says a lot about where America is at the moment. Finally, Paul, our own Taoiseach, our prime minister, is visiting Washington this week to meet with Joe Biden. Is Joe Biden having a bit of a farewell tour away from all of this, sort of getting in all the people that he wants to see before he's out of office?
Well, what's interesting is that his, you know, he's in power till January the 20th, of course. So he's got, just about 4 months, 4 or 5 months to go. It's interesting is that as his power ebbs, he nevertheless may face some of the most consequential moments of his presidency ahead. Notably, what is going to happen in the Middle East? Is Israel going to attack Iran, for example? What might the size and scale of that look like? What might the repercussions be and so forth? What about Ukraine and Russia? So he, despite the fact that, yes, he's on the way out, his power is ebbing, there are some big things going on and he's going to stay involved. But from going out and kind of talking about his legacy, that's a bit of an issue with the Harris campaign because Biden remains largely unpopular. I think that's a an unfair assessment of him, but that's another issue. The Harris campaign would, I think, prefer for him to sort of stay home and not say too much. But, you know, on the other hand, they can't criticize him. He's the president and Harris's boss and all that. So it's kind of a delicate issue for both Harris and Biden.
Paul Brandes from West Wing Reports and the White House Bureau Chief.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.